Chapter 38. Had ever been mentioned, she set that down to her late uncle's generosity. As he had been strictly charged by her aunt to say nothing to her husband of this gift, and Wildev, as was natural enough, had not brought himself to mention to his wife a single particular of the midnight scene in the heath. Christian's terror, in like manner, had tied his tongue on the share he took in that proceeding, and hoping that by some means or other the money had gone to its proper destination, he simply asserted as much, without giving details. Therefore, when a week or two had passed away, Mrs. Eobright began to wonder why she never heard from her son of the receipt of the present, and to add gloom to her perplexity, came the possibility that resentment might be the cause of his silence. She could hardly believe as much, but why did he not write? She questioned Christian, and the confusion in his answers would at once have led her to believe that something was wrong, had not one half of his story been corroborated by Thomason's note. Mrs. Eobright was in this state of uncertainty when she was informed one morning that her son's wife was visiting her grandfather at Miss Tover. She determined to walk up the hill, see Eustacia, and ascertain from her daughter-in-law's lips whether the family guineas, which were to Mrs. Eobright what family jewels are to wealthier dowagers, had miscarried or not. When Christian learned where she was going, his concern reached its height. At the moment of her departure, he could prevaricate no longer, and, confessing to the gambling, told her the truth as far as he knew it, that the guineas had been won by Wildev. "What, is he going to keep them?" Mrs. Eobright cried. "I hope and trust not," moaned Christian. "He's a good man, and perhaps will do right things. He said you ought to have jibed Mr. Klim's share to Eustacia, and that's perhaps what he'll do himself." To Mrs. Eobright, as soon as she could calmly reflect, there was much likelihood in this, for she could hardly believe that Wildev would really appropriate money belonging to her son. The intermediate course of giving it to Eustacia was the sort of thing to please Wildev's fancy. But it filled the mother with anger nonetheless. That Wildev should have got command of the guineas after all, and should rearrange the disposal of them, placing Klim's share in Klim's wife's hands, because she had been his own sweetheart, and might be so still, was as irritating a pain as any that Mrs. Eobright had ever borne. She instantly dismissed the wretched Christian from her employ for his conduct in the affair, but, feeling quite helpless, and unable to do without him, told him afterwards that he might stay a little longer if he chose. Then as he hastened off to Eustacia, moved by a much less promising emotion towards her daughter-in-law than she had felt half an hour earlier when planning her journey. At that time it was to inquire in a friendly spirit if there had been any accidental loss. Now it was to ask plainly if Wildev had privately given her money which had been intended as a sacred gift to Klim. She started at 2 o'clock, and her meeting with Eustacia was hastened by the appearance of the young lady beside the pool, and bank which beordered her grandfather's premises, where she stood surveying the scene, and perhaps thinking of the romantic enactments it had witnessed in past days. When Mrs. Eobright approached, Eustacia surveyed her with the calm stare of a stranger. The mother-in-law was the first to speak. "Was coming to see you," she said. "Indeed," said Eustacia with surprise, for Mrs. Eobright, much to the girl's mortification, had refused to be present at the wedding. "Did not at all expect you." "I was coming on business only," said the visitor, more coldly than at first. "Will you excuse my asking this, have you received a gift from Thomason's husband?"
"A gift?
I mean money."
"What, I myself?"
"Well, I meant yourself. Privately, though, I was not going to put it in that way."
"Money from Mr. Wildev?"
"No, never."
"Madam, what do you mean by that?"
Eustacia fired up all too quickly, for her own consciousness of the old attachment between herself and Wildev led her to jump to the conclusion that Mrs. Eobright also knew of it, and might have come to accuse her of receiving dishonorable presents from him now.
"I simply asked the question," said Mrs. Eobright. I have been. You ought to have better opinions of me. I feared you were against me from the first, exclaimed Eustacia.
No. I was simply for Clem, replied Mrs. Eobright, with too much emphasis in her earnestness.
T is the instinct of everyone to look after their own.
How can you imply that he required guarding against me? Cried Eustacia, passionate tears in her eyes.
Have not injured him by marrying him.
What sin have I done that you should think so ill of me?
You had no right to speak against me to him when I have never wronged you.
I only did what was fair under the circumstances, said Mrs. Eobright more softly.
Would rather not have gone into this question at present, but you compel me.
I am not ashamed to tell you the honest truth.
I was firmly convinced that he ought not to marry you, therefore I tried to dissuade him by all the means in my power. But it is done now, and I have no idea of complaining anymore. I am ready to welcome you.
Ah, yes, it is very well to see things in that business point of view, murmured Eustacia with a smothered fire of feeling.
But why should you think there is anything between me and Mr. Wildov? I have a spirit as well as you.
I am indignant, and so would any woman be.
It was a condescension in me to be Clem's wife, and not a maneuver, let me remind you, and therefore I will not be treated as a schemer whom it becomes necessary to bear with, because as he has crept into the family.
Oh, said Mrs. Eobright, vainly endeavoring to control her anger.
Have never heard anything to show that my son's lineage is not as good as the vice, perhaps better.
It is amusing to hear you talk of condescension.
It was condescension, nevertheless, said Eustacia vehemently.
And if I had known then what I know now, that I should be living in this wild heath a month after my marriage, I should have thought twice before agreeing.
It would be better not to say that. It might not sound truthful.
I am not aware that any deception was used on his part. I know there was not, whatever might have been the case on the other side.
This is too exasperating, answered the younger woman huskily, her face crimsoning and her eyes darting light.
How can you dare to speak to me like that?
I insist upon repeating to you that had I known that my life would from my marriage up to this time have been as it is, I should have said no.
I don't complain.
I have never uttered a sound of such a thing to him, but it is true.
I hope therefore that in the future you will be silent on my eagerness.
If you injure me now, you injure yourself.
Injure you? Do you think I am an evil disposed person?
You injured me before my marriage, and you have now suspected me of secretly favoring another man for money.
I could not help what I thought, but I have never spoken of you outside my house.
You spoke of me within it, to Clem, and you could not do worse.
I did my duty, and I'll do mine.
A part of which will possibly be to set him against his mother.
It is always so.
But why should I not bear it as others have borne it before me?
I understand you, said Eustacia, breathless with emotion.
You think me capable of every bad thing. Who can be worse than a wife who encourages a lover and poisons her husband's mind against his relative?
Yet that is now the character given to me.
Will you not come and drag him out of my hands?
Mrs. Eobright gave back heat for heat.
Don't rage at me, madam. It ill becomes your beauty, and I am not worth the injury you may do it on my account, I assure you.
I am only a poor old woman who has lost a son.
If you had treated me honorably, you would have had him still, Eustacia said, while scalding tears trickled from her eyes.
You have brought yourself to folly. You have caused a division which can never be healed.
I have done nothing. This audacity from a young woman is more than I can bear.
It was asked for. You have suspected me, and you have made me speak of my husband in a way I would not have done.
You will let him know that I have spoken thus, and it will cause misery between us.
Will you go away from me?
You are no friend.
I will go when I have spoken a word.
If anyone says I have come here to question you without good grounds for it, that person speaks untruly.
If anyone says that I attempted to stop your marriage by any but honest means, that person too does not speak the truth.
I have fallen on an evil time, God has been unjust to me in letting you insult me. Probably my son's happiness does not lie on this side of the grave, for he is a foolish man who neglects the advice of his parent. You, Eustacia, stand on the edge of a precipice without knowing it. Only show my son one half the temper you have shown me today and you may before long, and you will find that, though he is as gentle as a child with you now, he can be as hard as steel. The excited mother then withdrew, and Eustacia, panting, stood looking into the pool. Too he is set upon by adversities, but he sings a song. The result of that unpropitious interview was that Eustacia, instead of passing the afternoon with her grandfather, hastily returned home to Klim, where she arrived 3 hours earlier than as he had been expected. She came indoors with her face flushed, and her eyes still showing traces of her recent excitement. Eobright looked up astonished. He had never seen her in any way approaching to that state before. She passed him by, and would have gone upstairs unnoticed, but Klim was so concerned, that he immediately followed her. "What is the matter, Eustacia?" he said. She was standing on the hearthrug in the bedroom, looking upon the floor, her hands clasped in front of her, her bonnet yet unremoved. For a moment she did not answer. And then she replied in a low voice, "I have seen your mother, and I will never see her again." A weight fell like a stone upon Klim. That same morning, when Eustacia had arranged to go and see her grandfather, Klim had expressed a wish that she would drive down to Bloom's End and inquire for her mother-in-law, or adopt any other means she might think fit, to bring about a reconciliation. As he had set out gaily, and he had hoped for much. "Why is this?" he asked. "I cannot tell, I cannot remember. I met your mother, and I will never meet her again. Why? What do I know about Mr. Wildev now? I won't have wicked opinions passed on me by anybody." Oh, it was too humiliating to be asked if I had received any money from him, or encouraged him, or something of the sort. I don't exactly know what. How could she have asked you that? She did. Then there must have been some meaning in it. What did my mother say besides? I don't know what she said, except in so far as this, that we both said words which can never be forgiven. Oh, there must be some misapprehension. Whose fault was it that her meaning was not made clear? I would rather not say. It may have been the fault of the circumstances, which were awkward at the very least. Oh, Klim, I cannot help expressing it. This is an unpleasant position that you have placed me in. But you must improve it, yes. Say you will, for I hate it all now. Yes, take me to Paris, and go on with your old occupation, Klim. I don't mind how humbly we live there at first, if it can only be Paris, and not Egdon Heath. But I have quite given up that idea, said Eobright, with surprise. Surely I never led you to expect such a thing. I own it. Yet there are thoughts which cannot be kept out of mind, and that one was mine. Must I not have a voice in the matter, now I am your wife and the sharer of your doom? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.